Chapter 6. I went directly on shore, taking with me the young friar I mentioned, to whom I had told the story of my living there, and the manner of it, and every particular both of myself and those I left there, and who was on that account extremely desirous to go with me. We had, besides, about 16 men well armed, if we had found any new guests there which we did not know of, but we had no need of weapons. As we went on shore upon the tide of flood, near high water, we rowed directly into the creek, and the first man I fixed my eye upon was the Spaniard whose life I had saved, and whom I knew by his face perfectly well. As to his habit, I shall describe it afterwards. I ordered nobody to go on shore at first but myself, but there was no keeping Friday in the boat, for the affectionate creature had spied his father at a distance, a good way off the Spaniards, where, indeed, I saw nothing of him, and if they had not let him go ashore, he would have jumped into the sea. He was no sooner on shore, but he flew away to his father like an arrow out of a bow. It would have made any man shed tears, in spite of the firmest resolution, to have seen the first transports of this poor fellow's joy, when he came to his father. How he embraced him, kissed him, stroked his face, took him up in his arms, set him down upon a tree, and lay down by him, then stood and looked at him, as anyone would look at a strange picture, for a quarter of an hour together, then lay down on the ground, and stroked his legs, and kissed him, and then got up again, and stared at him. One would have thought the fellow bewitched. But it would have made a dog laugh the next day, to see how his passion ran out another way. In the morning he walked along the shore with his father several hours, always leading him by the hand, as if he had been a lady, and every now and then he would come to the boat, to fetch something or other for him, either a lump of sugar, a dram, a biscuit, or something or other that was good. In the afternoon his frolics ran another way, for then he would set the old man down upon the ground, and dance about him, and make a thousand antic gestures. And all the while he did this, he would be talking to him, and telling him one story or another of his travels, and of what had happened to him abroad to divert him. In short, if the same filial affection was to be found in Christians to their parents, in our part of the world, one would be tempted to say there would hardly have been any need of the fifth commandment. But this is a digression. I return to my landing. It would be needless to take notice of all the ceremonies and civilities that the Spaniards received me with. The first Spaniard, whom, as I said, I knew very well, was he whose life I had saved. He came towards the boat, attended by one more, carrying a flag of truce also, and he not only did not know me at first, but he had no thoughts, no notion of its being me that was come, till I spoke to him. "Señor," said I, in Portuguese, "do you not know me?" At which he spoke not a word, but giving his musket to the man that was with him, threw his arms abroad, saying something in Spanish that I did not perfectly hear, came forward and embraced me, telling me he was inexcusable not to know that face again that he had once seen, as of an angel from heaven sent to save his life. He said abundance of very handsome things, as a well-bred Spaniard always knows how, and then, beckoning to the person that attended him, bade him go, and call out his comrades. He then asked me if I would walk to my old habitation, where he would give me possession of my own house again, and where I should see they had made but mean improvements. I walked along with him, but, alas, I could no more find the place than if I had never been there, for they had planted so many trees, and placed them in such a position, so thick and close to one another, and in 10 years' time they were grown so big, that the place was inaccessible, except by such windings and blind ways as they themselves only, who made them, could find. I asked them what put them upon all these fortifications. He told me I would say there was need enough of it, when they had given me an account, how they had passed their time since their arriving in the island, especially after they had the misfortune to find that I was gone. He told me he could not, but have some pleasure in my good fortune, when he heard that I was gone in a good ship, and to my satisfaction, and that he had oftentimes a strong persuasion, that one time or other he should see me again, but nothing that ever befell him in his life, he said, was so surprising and afflicting to him at first as the disappointment he was under when he came back to the island, and found I was not there. As to the three barbarians, so he called them, that were left behind, and of whom, he said, he had a long story to tell me, the Spaniards all thought themselves much better among the savages, only that their number was so small. And, says he, had they been strong enough, we had been all long ago in purgatory, and with that he crossed himself on the breast. But, sir, says he, I hope you will not be displeased, when I shall tell you how, forced by necessity, we were obliged for our own preservation to disarm them, and make them our subjects, as they would not be content with being moderately our masters, but would be our murderers. I answered I was afraid of it, when I left them there, and nothing troubled me at my parting from the island, but that they were not come back, that I might have put them in possession of everything first, and left the others in a state of subjection, as they deserved. But if they had reduced them to it, I was very glad, and should be very far from finding any fault with it. For I knew they were a parcel of refractory, ungoverned villains, and were fit for any manner of mischief. While I was saying this, the man came whom he had sent back, and with him 11 more. In the dress they were in it was impossible to guess what nation they were of, but he made all clear, both to them and to me. First, he turned to me, and pointing to them, said, "These, sir, are some of the gentlemen who owe their lives to you." And then turning to them, and pointing to me, he let them know who I was, upon which they all came up, one by one, not as if they had been sailors, and ordinary fellows, and the like, but really as if they had been ambassadors or noblemen, and I a monarch or great conqueror. Their behavior was, to the last degree, obliging and courteous, and yet mixed with a manly majestic gravity, which very well became them. And, in short, they had so much more manners than I, that I scarce knew how to receive their civilities, much less how to return them in kind. The history of their coming to, and conduct in, the island after my going away is so very remarkable, and has so many incidents which the former part of my relation, will help to understand, and which will in most of the particulars, refer to the account I have already given, that I cannot but commit them, with great delight, to the reading of those that come after me. In order to do this as intelligibly as I can, I must go back to the circumstances in which I left the island, and the persons on it, of whom I am to speak. And first, it is necessary to repeat, that I had sent away Friday's father, and the Spaniard, the two whose lives I had rescued from the savages, in a large canoe to the main, as I then thought it, to fetch over the Spaniard's companions, that he left behind him, in order to save them from the like calamity that he had been in, and in order to succor them for the present, and that, if possible, we might together find some way for our deliverance afterwards. When I sent them away I had no visible appearance of, or the least room to hope for, my own deliverance, any more than I had 20 years before, much less had I any foreknowledge of what afterwards happened, I mean, of an English ship coming on shore there to fetch me off. And it could not be but a very great surprise to them, when they came back, not only to find that I was gone, but to find 3 strangers left on the spot, possessed of all that I had left behind me, which would otherwise have been their own. The first thing, however, which I inquired into, that I might begin where I left off, was of their own part, and I desired the Spaniard would give me a particular account of his voyage back to his countrymen with the boat, when I sent him to fetch them over. He told me there was little variety in that part, for nothing remarkable happened to them on the way, having had very calm weather and a smooth sea. As for his countrymen, it could not be doubted, he said, but that they were overjoyed to see him. It seems he was the principal man among them, the captain of the vessel they had been shipwrecked in, having been dead some time. Colon they were, he said, the more surprised to see him, because they knew that he was fallen into the hands of the savages, who, they were satisfied, would devour him as they did all the rest of their prisoners. That when he told them the story of his deliverance, and in what manner he was furnished for carrying them away, it was like a dream to them, and their astonishment, he said, was somewhat like that of Joseph's brethren, when he told them who he was, and the story of his exaltation in Pharaoh's court. But when he showed them the arms, the powder, the ball, the provisions that he brought them for their journey or voyage, they were restored to themselves, took a just share of the joy of their deliverance, and immediately prepared to come away with him. Their first business was to get canoes, and in this, they were obliged not to stick so much upon the honesty of it, but to trespass upon their friendly savages, and to borrow two large canoes, or piraguas, on pretense of going out a-fishing, or for pleasure. In these they came away the next morning. It seems they wanted no time to get themselves ready, for they had neither clothes nor provisions, nor anything in the world, but what they had on them, and a few roots to eat, of which they used to make their bread. They were in all 3 weeks absent, and in that time, unluckily for them, I had the occasion offered for my escape, as I mentioned in the other part, and to get off from the island, leaving three of the most impudent, hardened, ungoverned, disagreeable villains behind me that any man could desire to meet with, to the poor Spaniard's great grief and disappointment. The only just thing the rogues did was, that when the Spaniards came ashore, they gave my letter to them, and gave them provisions, and other relief, as I had ordered them to do. Also they gave them the long paper of directions which I had left with them, containing the particular methods which I took for managing every part of my life there, the way I baked my bread, bred up tame goats, and planted my corn, how I cured my grapes, made my pots, and, in a word, everything I did. All this being written down, they gave to the Spaniards. Two of them understood English well enough, colon, nor did they refuse to accommodate the Spaniards with anything else, for they agreed very well for some time. They gave them an equal admission into the house or cave, and they began to live very sociably, and the head Spaniard, who had seen pretty much of my methods, together with Friday's father, managed all their affairs. But as for the Englishmen, they did nothing but ramble about the island, shoot parrots, and catch tortoises. And when they came home at night, the Spaniards provided their suppers for them. The Spaniards would have been satisfied with this at the others, but let them alone, which, however, they could not find in their hearts to do long. But, like the dog in the manger, they would not eat themselves, neither would they let the others eat. The differences, nevertheless, were at first but trivial, and such as are not worth relating, but at last it broke out into open war. And it began with all the rudeness and insolence that can be imagined without reason, without provocation, contrary to nature, and indeed to common sense. And though, it is true, the first relation of it came from the Spaniards themselves, whom I may call the accusers, yet when I came to examine the fellows they could not deny a word of it. But before I come to the particulars of this part, I must supply a defect in my former relation, and this was, I forgot to set down among the rest, that just as we were weighing the anchor to set sail, there happened a little quarrel on board of our ship, which I was once afraid would have turned to a second mutiny. Nor was it appeased till the captain, rousing up his courage, and taking us all to his assistance, parted them by force, and making two of the most refractory fellows prisoners, he laid them in irons. And as they had been active in the former disorders, and let fall some ugly, dangerous words the second time, he threatened to carry them in irons to England, and have them hanged there for mutiny and running away with the ship. This, it seems, though the captain did not intend to do it, frightened some other men in the ship, and some of them had put it into the head of the rest, that the captain only gave them good words for the present, till they should come to same English port, and that then they should be all put into gaol, and tried for their lives. The mate got intelligence of this, and acquainted us with it, upon which it was desired that I, who still passed for a great man among them, should go down with the mate and satisfy the men, and tell them, that they might be assured, if they behaved well the rest of the voyage, all they had done for the time past should be pardoned. So I went, and after passing my honor's word to them they appeared easy, and the more so, when I caused the two men, that were in irons, to be released and forgiven. But this mutiny had brought us to an anchor for that night. The wind also falling calm next morning, we found that our two men who had been laid in irons had stolen each of them a musket and some other weapons, what powder or shot they had we knew not, and had taken the ship's pinnace, which was not yet hauled up, and run away with her to their companions in roguery on shore. As soon as we found this, I ordered the longboat on shore, with 12 men and the mate, and away they went to seek the rogues. But they could neither find them nor any of the rest, for they all fled into the woods, when they saw the boat coming on shore. The mate was once resolved, in justice to their roguery, to have destroyed their plantations, burned all their household stuff and furniture, and left them to shift without it. But having no orders, he let it all alone, left everything as he found it, and bringing the pinnace away, came on board without them. These two men made their number 5, but the other 3 villains were so much more wicked than they, that after they had been 2 or 3 days together they turned the 2 newcomers out of doors to shift for themselves, and would have nothing to do with them, nor could they for a good while be persuaded to give them any food. As for the Spaniards, they were not yet come. When the Spaniards came first on shore, the business began to go forward. The Spaniards would have persuaded the 3 English brutes to have taken in their countrymen again, that, as they said, they might be all one family, but they would not hear of it, so the 2 poor fellows lived by themselves, and finding nothing but industry and application would make them live comfortably, they pitched their tents on the north shore of the island, but a little more to the west, to be out of danger of the savages, who always landed on the east parts of the island. Here they built them 2 huts, one to lodge in, and the other to lay up their magazines and stores in, and the Spaniards having given them some corn for seed, and some of the peas which I had left them, they dug, planted, and enclosed, after the pattern I had set for them all, and began to live pretty well. Their first crop of corn was on the ground, and though it was but a little bit of land which they had dug up at first, having had but a little time, yet it was enough to relieve them, and find them with bread and other eatables. And one of the fellows, being the cook's mate of the ship, was very ready at making soup, puddings, and such other preparations as the rice and the milk, and such little flesh as they got, furnished him to do. They were going on in this little thriving position, when the 3 unnatural rogues, their own countrymen who, in mere humor, and to insult them, came and bullied them, and told them the island was theirs. That the governor, meaning me, had given them the possession of it, and nobody else had any right to it, and that they should build no houses upon their ground, unless they would pay rent for them. The 2 men, thinking they were jesting at first, asked them to come in and sit down, and see what fine houses they were that they had built, and to tell them what rent they demanded. And one of them merrily said, if they were the ground landlords, he hoped if they built tenements upon their land, and made improvements, they would, according to the custom of landlords, grant a long lease, and desired they would get a scrivener to draw the writings. One of the 3, cursing and raging, told them they should see they were not in jest, and going to a little place at a distance, where the honest men had made a fire to dress their victuals, he takes a firebrand, and claps it to the outside of their hut, and set it on fire. Indeed, it would have been all burned down in a few minutes, if one of the two had not run to the fellow, thrust him away, and trod the fire out with his feet, and that not without some difficulty too. The fellow was in such a rage at the honest man's thrusting him away, that he returned upon him, with a pole he had in his hand, and had not the man avoided the blow very nimbly, and run into the Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.